Hi, this is Jamie Bura. About to sit down on the podcast and have a chat about my career thus far. Let's get into it. All right, back for another edition of the Our Town, Our Team podcast. Nathan Ryan sitting down with the man that we know as JB, Jamie Bura. Thanks for joining me. Haven't done one of these podcasts before, you were just saying.
No, I certainly listen to a fair few of them in my commute to and from training, but yet to do one, so we'll see how we go.
All right, let's get the monkey off the back. So plenty of things to talk about. Obviously done a lot in, I want to say a short period of time, but the reality is you've actually been in first grade for a while. Do you feel like an older head when some of these young bucks are coming in to do their first, second pre-season training?
I certainly do, particularly the last couple of years, seeing a lot of the young blokes that have come through and certainly thrived at the club. It's certainly something you do notice. It's hard to believe that 10 years ago I was rolling into my first pre-season seeing a lot of kind of old heads, and I suppose that's me now.
Do you look back on that first pre-season now that you've had so many, you're a senior leader, and do you have time to reflect back on the journey? Do you have many of those moments?
You certainly do. I suppose I've still got a lot of good friends from that first pre-season. Still a really good friends of mine today. So plenty of times, I suppose, when we're having a beer or catching up over some food, it's something you talk about. And obviously a lot of young fellas that are coming through that ask me a bit of advice about how to deal with pre-season, it kind of takes me back to those initial, grueling days in the sun. And it's safe to say that those haven't changed, in the 10 years. They're still hard, no matter what you do. And I suppose at those times you do reflect.
When you ask for those bits of advice, I'm sure that you've had plenty of great pieces of advice over the years. What's your main takeaway that you like to pass on to Gen Next?
When it comes to the preseason, it's just about attacking it. It doesn't get any easier. I suppose you just get used to the fact that it's going to be difficult, and just give it everything you got. When you're first coming in, it's important that you make an impression. There's obviously established players in every team, and if you're doing your first preseason, it's important that you kind of show them what you got, as quickly as possible. So it's important, that you're throwing everything you can into, whether it's training, in any competitive games, and any opportunity that you get, I suppose, to put your name forward, it's important you do.
So before that first preseason, you're out Parramatta way. How does someone in Western Sydney end up at the Manly Sea Eagles? Talk me through that journey.
It was a pretty eventful 2007 for me. Was kind of a real roller coaster. It started by me not being selected for the local Parramatta SG ball team, which I thought at the time was what I needed to do to kind of progress into first grade, and not making that team was pretty devastating, and was pushed back to a team called, I think it was Western Sydney, which is essentially the cast-offs of Parramatta and Penrith. For those kind of listening that know that, they probably considered the Western Sydney team a bit of a buy round playing SG Ball and Mats. But unfortunately for someone in that Parramatta team, and fortunately for myself, my persistence, I was able to come back into that Parramatta team, a game or two in, which was coached by our very own Troy Pezzard, actually.
Really? He looks after our recruitment for those of you who aren't familiar with Pezzy.
And, kind of just hanging in there, I was given an opportunity through injury, and at the end of that year, I was actually starting in the team that won the SG Ball Comp for Parramatta.
Right.
And from what was essentially a real low moment to a real high one, and kind of that culminated in a contract offer with Manly, who... for me, was a club that I supported from birth, basically. So through my parents, who were Manly fans. So to get an offer from them, it was more or less a no-brainer for me to go and take up that, regardless of opportunity. That was essentially, I felt like I'd made it at that moment, and it was only going to be for the first year of 20s. So that's how I ended up on the beaches.
When was there a moment during your schooling days where you knew that being a professional rugby league player was the goal, and when that contract came for the first year of 20s, did that sort of solidify it, that, yeah, this could be a genuine career?
But probably that same year, 2007, that's why I said it was probably a real, it was a very important year in my development for rugby league. You know, there was a lot of things going on through school football. We had, you know, CCC, New South Wales, going for Australian schoolboys. You know, you had that avenue to try and, I suppose, put your name in lights. Playing Harold Matthews, or sorry, SG Bulls 2007, you know, it was a great opportunity to kind of push your name into flag. But, you know, the competition, no longer. But the under-20s first year was 2008. So that was considered a real opportunity as well. So that year for me was a year where I truly considered that first grade could be an option for myself. Now, I was always, I suppose, part of the reason why I wasn't initially selected for Parramatta was that I was considered too small for the position to play in the forwards. So there's always that doubt. But, you know, having so many opportunities, as I said, to potentially trial for Australian schoolboys and the next year's under-20s was a time for me where I thought, yeah, first grade is a real chance. So, yeah, probably at that point, when I got myself to Manly to play 20s, I still didn't necessarily think first grade was going to happen. In my first year, Manly won the comp 40-0, you know, a team full of, you know, absolute legends and freaks. So just playing 20s was enough for me. At that point, I obviously wanted to play first grade, but I just wasn't sure if it had come. And, yeah, thankfully it wasn't too much longer after that that I had to wait.
Have you always been in the forwards? Because I think one of the great attributes, part of me, that you've got in your game is your versatility. You can play almost anywhere. Is that something that has come later in life, those skills have developed, or did you sort of chop and change in the juniors?
No, I didn't do a whole lot of changing. I played predominantly in the forwards, whether it's lock or on the edge, in the back row. School footy, I just played hooker. New South Wales CCC, I was kind of a hooker utility. So I suppose school football is kind of where my ability to play multiple positions developed. We had a really strong team there at Patrician Brothers Blacktown with a lot of great forwards, so it was a matter of trying to find how they all fit into the team. So playing hooker was for me. Then going into Manly, played hooker and a bit of lock, and then I actually didn't play kind of any halves, any centre, until I played first grade.
Wow.
Yeah, so Des Hasler kind of, those first few years kind of threw me into the fire, and it's turned out being a blessing in disguise, really. You know, being able to play those positions only helped me in selections, you know, for the years it came. But, yeah, it wasn't until first grade that I played, you know, in a lot of the positions that I have found myself in. But I suppose that kind of diverse, you know, that ability to play multiple positions developed playing school football.
So you arrive in Manly 2008. What other names are there on day one for 20s training?
20s training, Daly Cherry Evans. He was one of the first ones. We were both, I suppose, the outsiders, the ones that were brought in. Manly had a pretty reasonable team from SG Ball, still that same squad together. We had Darcy Lussick was in that squad. William Hopewadi was probably 12, but he was there. Just trying to think. Oh, Jared Weir Hargraves.
Yeah, that's right.
Kenny Edwards.
Yeah.
Who else do we have? We had a lot of good players. Those few years when Michael Oldfield was there, Lama Tassi.
Plenty of NRL experience by the sound of it in that.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about Kieran Foran, who's a pretty darn good player as well. So we had quite a good squad, very young.
The first day that you met Cherry?
Our first day, yeah, met Cherry. We were kind of a bit of the outcasts, to be honest, and just because we'd just moved from home, first time for both of us. I'd only had to move 40 minutes. He'd had to move from Queensland, so it was a bit hard for him. And I suppose, we kind of just kind of found each other through friendship at that point. And still to this day, he's one of my best mates. Darcy Lussick's one of my best mates as well. Yeah. And I got along with the rest of them boys, but I suppose coming to a new club, you kind of cling to those who are also in that new experience initially, and he was someone we kind of gravitated to each other.
The next year, another year of 20s, 2009, and you make the team of the year. You named it lock. I think Cherry might have been part of that team as well at halfback. Was it this season, 2009, where the confidence was growing and you realised you're really knocking on the door for a first grade start?
Yeah, definitely. 2009, we had a really good team. I think we might have had four blokes in the 20s team of the year. Probably unlucky not to have more. And I think certainly that year in my development, we had Dave Penner as a coach there, who was a fantastic coach, really good at developing all of us players, I suppose. And for myself, I found like in 2009, it was certainly my best year. I was able to play some really good, consistent football in a good team. And, you know, having conversations kind of with Dez over the course of that year, you know, I think I was 18th man, which I think was more just to kind of reward me for being 18th man. But, you know, that was a reward enough for me to kind of push even harder. And, you know, to have the option the next year to go to a full pre-season, you know, I suppose that was when I really thought, you know, playing first grade was certainly on the horizon.
So 2010 was your first NRL pre-season?
Yeah, so I had half a year. I did kind of a pre-Christmas yeah. In 2009, where I was training about 3 days, three of the five a week, and then doing some 20 stuff. And then in 2010, that was my first full pre-season, yeah.
Still a lot of really, I guess, famous faces, some freakish talent there at the club. Is there ever a moment where you're there with the full-timers and you felt a little bit nervous or starstruck, or had a conversation with one of the guys where you've had to pinch yourself or said something silly?
Well, certainly, you know, in that first summer, that summer pre-season block that I had, and then even in 2010, you know, we're all, you know, all rugby league fans, you know, all of us at Newcastle, and all these boys were fans at some point. You know, they're the same people that were sitting in the stands, the same people that come and watch games. So, yeah. Of course, when you kind of grow up, and for myself, supporting that team, you know, the players meant a little bit more to me, I suppose. So there was plenty of moments like that. I was able to kind of keep myself in control, and I didn't have any real fangirl moments, thankfully, no. But... yeah, there was certain plenty of times where I had to pinch myself. You know, just the people that I was talking to, and I was talking footy with them, and yeah. You know, to get any kind of compliment, I suppose, and any bit of advice was something I cherished. So, yeah, it was certainly a good experience.
Who was your guy when he come over and he'd give you a compliment? It'd just mean that little bit more.
Probably for me, it was Glenn Stewart.
Yeah,
he was someone who, you know, I really respect as a footballer first and foremost, but also as a bloke off the field. He was obviously a freak. There's few things that a man his size can do in the game. You know, he had the ability to kind of to do everything. He's such a great defender. He was as good a ball player as a lot of the halves that are running around, and just tough, and knew the game so well. And I suppose it's someone who I tried to model my game on a fair bit.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to ball play, willing to do the hard work. But also, he's off-field, the way that he was able to kind of bring the boys together. You know, he's a real larrikin, kind of loved a beer, and kind of really helped build what was a good kind of strong culture there at the club, where it was really inclusive.
So you've got the confidence from Glenn Stewart. You're getting the confidence from Desi, you're playing some good footy, and then you find out that you're going to make your NRL debut in round 10. Talk me through that conversation. Where were you? Was it Des that told you, or one of the senior players? Talk me through that moment.
Yeah, so this is an interesting story. There's not many people who have kind of a debut run like I did, and I hope there's not many after me either. But I kind of was on the radar quite early. Des wanted me to play. We were going to be against Melbourne. It was down in Melbourne, and it was kind of at the peak of kind of the Melbourne Manly rivalry.
Yeah.
You know, Melbourne have been such a fantastic team for a long time, and we were a real strong team for a long time as well. And it was either myself or another kind of player. And up until that point, I was 18th man. You know, I was adamant that I'd be 18th man.
Yeah.
And I didn't think too much into it. And then we're on captain's run, and there was a bit of talking, and it was just, I didn't quite understand what was going on, but there was a bit of shuffling, and then there was one upset man, and kind of stormed away from Desi, and then I got called over and got told that I would make my debut.
Wow.
So that was kind of the day before the game, so I'd only just found out, and then quickly got the family to fly down for the game on the next night, and proceeded to stay on the bench for a full 80 minutes.
Nice.
And we won the game 12-10. And straight after the game, obviously, Desi's come up and kind of consoled me. Not that I was emotional. I was a little bit upset, but I suppose if I was putting my coach's hat on, I could kind of understand. You know, he was saying it's not the type of game that I wanted you to kind of come in. You know, it was a really tight win.
Yeah.
I was hoping that I'd be able to get you on at a different time. And
yeah,
they're all things that you just, you know what, okay, mate, no worries. Yeah. You know, on to the next type of thing. Unfortunately, then I wasn't selected for another couple of weeks before I was selected again to play the Titans.
I'll just stop you there for a moment. When you've missed out on the Melbourne game, right, so you're a bit filthy, but you're thinking, all right, it's going to come the next week. And then you're not picked. What are you thinking? You think, geez, I've missed my shot here?
Yeah, not really. It was more because the reason why I was so close to making it was due to an injury of someone who was able to play multiple positions. Just off the top of my head, I think it might have been Chris Bailey. And that essentially opened the door for me. And he was only out for a week.
Right.
So then, you know, the conversation next week was, look, Bales is back.
Yeah.
And I had no real argument for that. It's not like I'd played and had a blinder or anything. Sure. I didn't actually get on the field. Obviously, there was a lot of... Dez was saying, you know, you're going to get your chance. I didn't feel like the door was completely shut on me. So a couple of weeks of going back to Q Cup. I was playing good footy in Q Cup. It was a really enjoyable year. You know, again, playing with Daly, Darcy. We had Terence Cusi, mate of mine, Michael Chapman. We had a really good team. So we're going back to a team playing well,
yeah,
and having fun. And I always thought, you know, first grade will come.
Yeah.
So it was the best way that I could attack it. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I was drafted into the 17 again to play the Titans at Brookvale Oval. And we end up losing that game by 8, and by the 80th minute, I still hadn't got on the field.
This is nuts.
Yeah, so that one really upset me. I was quite angry about that one. The conversation I had with Dez afterwards, while still maintaining respect, was, you know, if you're not going to pick me, yeah, if you're going to pick me,
play me.
And if you're not going to play me, don't pick me. You know, and this time... You know,
did you respond well to that?
Yeah, again, I said it respectfully. We're talking about Des Hasler. I'm not going to start yelling and swearing and whatnot. Essentially, he said, look, I thought I had a good opportunity to get you on, and I didn't. And to be honest, it ended up costing us. You know, we ended up losing. And he accepted kind of the fact that, you know, he should have got me on sooner. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I wasn't dropped for the week later. I was picked. And the week later was against Parramatta, my junior club. And in I think the 50th minute, I got on the field and debuted.
What were you thinking at halftime when you still hadn't been on?
Well, I'm pretty sure I went up to him and I said, you got to make sure you get me on. And he said, yep, you're going to be on in the 50th minute. You're going to be the first change after halftime. And true to his word, I was the first change after halftime. I got about 20 minutes and I again playing against, I suppose, blokes that I'd kind of grown up watching play, you know, Nathan Highmarsh, Fui Fui Moi Moi, Jared Hain. He wasn't that much older than me, but
yeah,
he'd been playing for years at that point.
So
that was, and also Daniel Mortimer, who was in our SG ball team, so that was pretty good. But yeah, just to get on the field, it was 15-20 minutes of me just running like a headless chook into everything. And anyone who's made their debut would probably say the same. You just want to get into everything. But I'd finally done it.
When you get on, sigh of relief, monkey off the back. What What was the emotions running onto the field, handing that interchange card over?
You're just really, really proud. You're excited. You just want to do the absolute best you can. You know, you want to make the best impression you can. You want to be, this is your dream come true first and foremost, and you want to make sure you stay there.
Yeah.
And again, these are your peers who, you know, you want them to respect you and want you in their team. So it was just flying into everything. You know, my backside was hanging out when I finally got off. And I remember sitting down next to, I think it was Matt Cross. I said, geez, that's fast. And he goes, oh, that's a pretty slow game, that one.
Ah.
Yeah. So...
do you remember your first touch or your first tackle? What that first
I remember probably my first tackle. And it was, I think it was on Big Fooey, and I actually did a really good job, and he ended up on his back. So nice. That gave me a fair bit of confidence as well that, you know, I'd done the work. Yeah. Obviously, I'd been given an opportunity in first grade because there was belief that I could do a job, and to go out there and do it against, you know, some players that I truly respected also helped with the confidence.
Did you get many games that year, that rookie season?
I got 5 that year. So I think I got 1 or 2 games after that, and then I played the 2 last games of the year. I think it was round 26, and then a semi-final we played against the Dragons, but we had half our team out.
Yeah.
I think we lost 18-2. It was 2010. I think they won the comp that year, didn't they? Dragons.
The Dragons. Yeah.
So it was good. It was honestly, I still say it was probably the most enjoyable year, you know, aside from what sounds like a horror debut story. You know, I was playing some good footy and enjoying it in Queensland Cup. I was rewarded for it. Got to play some footy, some first grade football, and to top it off, I got to play a semi-final in, you know, my first 5 games, which few people can kind of boast that.
I like that you're smiling about it now, because I'd imagine at the time you weren't smiling too much.
No, well, you know, all was forgiven once I got on.
Yeah.
Yeah, all was forgiven once I finally got on, and thankfully never did it to me again. Yeah. So, I'm hoping not many people have to deal with a debut like that.
2011, getting more first grade games under your belt. A couple of tries in round 4 against the Rabbitohs. This year, really a breakout season for you. Is it fair to say? Do you feel like you're becoming a regular staple in the NRL side?
Yeah, well, in this year, I think I played every game. I might have missed one. I was sick or something. I think I had an illness of some sort. But yeah, by this point, you never say that you're confident that you're a first grader at that point. Yep. But, you know, I was playing regularly. My minutes, you know, were around, you know, anywhere between kind of 30 and 60. At this point, you know, Des, the South game you talk about, I played 80 minutes in the centres, scored a double out there. I think he played me at 6 on the wing. I was played a bit in the middle. You know, I was a front rower, running back off kickoffs, on the edge. But he was finding ways to get me into the game, which I was thankful for. And at this point, we've still got a fantastic team. You know, some of the best players, you know, in the competition. And it was an absolute joy. And every day training was a joy. You know, playing games, we were winning. We won so many games that you certainly don't take it for granted. But we just kind of had that... a desire to just keep going and winning, and obviously we wanted to win the comp every year we played, but you know, there was a real good feel that year.
This year you do win the comp.
Yep.
Talk me through that final series, because it's something that the guys have been through before. This squad has won a competition just a couple of years ago. The nuts and bolts of that squad still there. Throw in the likes of Daly Cherry-Evans and Kieran Foran. I think it was both their rookie years, or it might have been Cherry's rookie year.
I think Kieran debuted a couple of years before. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a young squad. Throw yourself into that mix. So it's got that nice blend of youth and experience, and that experience in some key roles with Brett Stewart and Glenn Stewart and some experienced forwards there. What was it about this squad and that final series?
Well, I think, as you said, we had so much experience playing. You know, the boys who'd won in 08 had lost in 07, and a lot of those were still on board, so they'd kind of seen it all. Mm. And it was business as usual, really, you know, apart from myself and Daly, and I think Darcy, you know, everyone had, you know, had a solid foundation of games under them. They'd seen finals football. So it was really easy to just get caught up in that kind of worry about us mentality that was very much encouraged by Des and the boys at that point. And that's what we did. I remember, who do we beat? We beat the Cowboys, I think. I think the Sharks. I'm just trying to think how we went through. I just remember, you know, we got through the games. We did what we needed to do. I think the Cowboys, we ended up putting a score on in the end, but it was quite close up until the last 20 minutes, and then we put a real score on. And going into the grand final, I remember the night before, I had, I think it was a friend's 21st, and I was watching the Melbourne Warriors game. And obviously, that were the other ones yet to make the final was the winner of those, and obviously rooting for the Warriors because, you know, Melbourne were such a good team. And yeah, at that point in time, the Warriors just knew how to beat Melbourne. And I remember when the Warriors beat them, because you just thought that, well, nothing's assured. You know, yeah, we'd beaten the Warriors comfortably a couple of times that year.
Yeah.
And with the squad we had, we thought we could again. Yeah. And I'll never forget kind of, I think it was, you know, captain's run. Glenn Stewart just kind of said, look, we don't need to overcomplicate it. You know, it wasn't said arrogantly or anything, but he just said, we've beaten these guys twice this year, mm-hmm, and we've done it quite comfortably. Don't go out there and think they're going to be a different team because it's a grand final.
Yeah.
Be confident in what we're doing and where we're going, and we'll get the job done. And I just remember thinking, oh, yeah, like it's probably one of the best things you could have said for myself, just but not just for myself, just kind of calmed it down that kind of they're still the same team that we versed during the year, you know. It's just at a bigger moment.
Yeah. What do you remember about that week? Grand final breakfast, a lot of media commitments. I imagine it's a pretty full-on whirlwind of a week. Is there a moment that stands out? Anguera was on the podcast last week and mentioned the grand final breakfast, the year that they won it. They actually all got stuck in a lift, grand final breakfast, and there was some of the opposition in that lift as well. So that was just one of the funny moments that week.
No, there wasn't anything, you know, it was business as usual, aside from the fact that you've just got a heap of commitments. The grand final breakfast, I remember it was cold. It's essentially just for a bit of show anyway. Well, that's what I've experienced the two times that I've been there. No, there's not much that sticks out. You know, the main thing that kind of sticks out, like I said, was the thing that Glenn said. But what I do remember of the day, the grand final day, was I think the Warriors were actually in all three grades.
Yeah.
And it was just a sea of black and white.
Wow.
So, you know, at Manly, kind of generally booed at the best of times. But it was even more so at this point. So you got kind of 80,000 fans or more kind of going for the Warriors in all three grades. It was it made for a pretty intense environment.
I bet. How was the atmosphere running out of the tunnel?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like I said, there was so many Warriors fans. It was just boos, constant boos. Whenever we were kind of, we'd run out or whenever we'd get the ball, but yeah, just the crowd and how loud it was. You know, you could barely hear one another. It was something that I rarely experienced, but it was real special. And then kind of you do the anthem with so many people, and it's just, you can hear a pin drop, you know. They're things you certainly remember, make it pretty special.
You play off the bench. You guys obviously get the result that you want and lifting up the Premiership trophy. Who's the first person that you hug? And talk me through that lap, picking out the Manly fans, because there was some Manly fans there amongst the sea of black.
Well, I was on the bench when we won, so obviously went straight to the bench. I think big Georgie Rose almost crushed me spine. He was so happy. And then obviously I'm just stoked. Anyone who's near you, you're hugging and you're kissing them. You just can't believe, I'd come into such a quality team. It was essentially Premiership built already. And to be able to contribute throughout the year, you know, on grand final day to a grand final, I just thought, you know, how good's this? You know, this will happen all the time. I don't think, you know, at that moment I didn't realise how precious those moments are.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then doing the lap, you know, I had good friends of mine that are still good friends today from local football. They were there. You know, seeing my brother, got my brothers onto the field to do the lap with me, seeing mum and dad, they were just bawling their eyes out. I suppose having been there the whole way from me from start to here, it was just a real surreal moment. You know, you watch so many grand finals, and you know, to be a part of one, and again to be a part of one for a team that I supported when I was young, it was a special time for myself and my family.
The times get better because you re-sign with the club for another couple of seasons. Was there interest from rivals, or in your mind you're always just going to stick with Manly?
Oh, well, there was certainly a bit of interest. You know, your manager's there to do a job, but it was never, I was never going to leave. You know, as long as Manly did reasonably right, and when I say that, you know, I wasn't asking for too much. Yeah. Like, I was happy to stay for less anyway. And they wanted to keep me, so it was a really easy decision in my mind, having, you know, so many good friends at the club, and, you know, having built relationships, having won a comp. You know, I thought, you know, full steam ahead, let's win a few more.
Yeah. The next year, rep footy comes around, starts with City Country and then a Blues jersey. Big year for you?
Yeah, it was a huge year. And I suppose I'd always aspired to play rep footy, and you know, playing City was probably kind of my goal. You know? And then to kind of play well in City and continue to play well at club level, just to have my name in the conversation for Origin was something that, you know, I suppose kind of flatters you. You know, Origin's what you watch. You're at home with your family and you just get so pumped about it, and to be a part of something like that was something I always wanted to do, but I thought it was a while away. And lo and behold, I was picked for game one, and it was very special, you know, particularly for my mum and dad. Like I said, had been there from start to finish. They were the ones that we used to order pizza at home and be watching Origin on the telly, and
that was your routine.
Yeah, it still is my routine. To be able to do it for them, and then when you're kind of playing New South Wales, you're representing kind of more than just your family. You're kind of representing the whole state. Well, you're not kind of, you are.
Yeah.
So, it was an amazing kind of experience. I would have liked a bit more time, maybe another game, but at the end of the day, I'll take one over none. So, yeah, it's pretty special.
Ricky Stewart was the coach. Was he the one that called you, or did somebody from Manly get in touch with you? How'd you find out?
Ricky called me. He called me to let me know that I was in, and that I have a little role to play off the bench, and that he just wanted me to kind of enjoy kind of the week, enjoy the experience. He said he'd have me with a seasoned campaigner to room with. That person ended up being Greg Bird, and an absolute character. And it was a great experience, and you know, I didn't get a heap of time, but to be a part of it, it was down in Melbourne. It was like about 90,000 Queenslanders, it sounded like, were there.
Yeah.
We ended up losing, I think, by 2 or 4, which was hard to cop. But once I got the call from Rick, obviously called my dad. But at that point, it's on TV as well, so you know, I'm getting calls from everyone. And, I just remember so many tickets I had to buy for all the family, which I was happy to do. Certainly a cherished experience.
What's Greg Bird's quirks? What's he like to roommate?
He's just a good fella, honestly. He's a real larrikin, a bit of a joker, and just exactly what I needed, I think. Not that I'm a particularly shy person, but I suppose at that level, for myself, now, I'd been around, Brett Stewart was in the team, Glenn Stewart was in the team. I'd kind of been around some good star players, but those star players were my mates.
Yeah.
So to be around other star players, it was, I suppose I was a bit shy, and he was probably the perfect foil for that, and just getting me involved in just about every Euchre or 500 game we could play. We ended up winning a bit of coin that week, yeah. Amongst the boys. He was probably the perfect roommate for me.
What about some of the not-so-perfect roommates over the years, be it Manly, any of the rep teams, or Newcastle?
I'm trying to think. Probably the worst roommate I had is Darcy Lussick, just because he was such a bad snorer. and I'm sure he still is a bad snorer. I remember in the year of Queensland Cup, when we were always away, we'd have to take it in turns for who had to room with him, you see, because it's just like, and then he'd give you like a half an hour window to try and get asleep before he did.
Jeez.
And if you missed it, you'd end up with about 10 pillows on his bed because you'd just be throwing pillows at him. But, you know, it wasn't like he was unclean or anything. It was just the snoring. You just struggled to get sleep with old Big Das. So, I'd have to say him.
Fair play. Looking back on that Origin experience, anything that you'd change or do differently? Obviously, you said, you know, you'd want another game if you could, or some more minutes if you could have your time again. But I suppose you can't look back with too many regrets.
Nah. There's not much I could have changed. I think it was, you know, the first game for Robbie Farah at nine there. I think he might have played a game or so before that, but it was the first time that he was kind of entrusted with, you know, big minutes, and he did such a good job of it. Yep. And I think essentially made my job obsolete. It was just as simple as that. That's just how it goes, mate, honestly. And at the end of the day, I got a game, and I always strived after that to try and get myself back, but no, it just wasn't to be.
Does it burn you at all when you hear little, you know, snide comments being made?
It did. At the time, it did. Certainly, just because I didn't get a heap of minutes. And not that I'd cry poor about it. There's only so much I could do. But these, like now, you know, it's a lot of the advice I give to a lot of the young fellas now about social media is, you know, a lot of the things that are said about you are said, you know, purely to try and get a rile out of you. You know, they want a response out of you, and I've just learned to just understand that everyone's got opinions, and you just can't sway them. You know, if people want to think a certain way about you, there's nothing you can say to change their mind.
ACL, first major injury. Was that tough?
Yeah, it was. It was definitely tough. It was, bawled my eyes out, actually. I think it was around 25. We were in the semis already. I really thought we had a team that could go on and do some damage. And, I just remember going into a tackle and kind of stepping, and then a bit of a burn in the back of my knee. And then I went to see the physio, and the physio said, oh, well, I don't know if it is. So I played for another 10 minutes, then went to step off it, and there was nothing there. So put my hand up straight away, come to the sideline. They did all the testing then and there, and it's pretty accurate at that point in time. And it was pretty emotional. Obviously, like you said, first major injury, and I suppose until you go through some of that, you kind of think an ACL's just the worst of the worst, which, don't get me wrong, it is bad. But the way things are these days, you know, and medical teams are, it's a 6-month thing if you do things right, and 9 if you want to be safe. So I chose the 6-month route, got it done, and thankfully I had, you know, Steve Maddie, who was another fantastic teammate. He had, I think, shoulder reco. David Williams had done his ACL the year before. So I had a lot of people to kind of call on.
Yeah.
And essentially pushed me hard to get myself back and ready for round one, which I missed, but we made round two.
Was it that year or the year before that Glenn Stewart was out and you basically took his place and had an absolute blinder of a year?
I think it was 2013. Or it might have been 14, actually.
You played... Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I think it might have been 15.
Gifty that year,
because he had, I think, a finger or thumb.
I've seen from you, it was just ridiculous.
So, around that time that I had a bit of a bad injury run wasn't the best timing. Yeah. I feel like there was a lot of opportunities presented that I was unable to take because of injury.
In what respect?
Oh, I just kind of. Whether it be injuries to other people in positions that are kind of opening up the door for me, I suppose the best ability is availability, and you know, during that time, you know, I had, you know, like I said, I got myself back for 2015, played another, I think I played 7 games, 8 games, and then did the other one. So, you know, in it was under Jeff Tuvey, he'd be on board for a couple of years, but I just felt like there was a real opportunity to kind of cement my place kind of in that starting team, really put my print on it. And just with the injuries, it kind of curtailed me a little bit at the time. So, yeah. But yeah, so then was it round, I think it was round 8 or 9 down in Melbourne. It was Anzac round, actually. I did the other one. It was a bit worse.
And then what goes through your mind after you've worked 6 months to get back from the first one? You're back for a little bit and then the next one goes. It's just blow after blow.
Yeah, it was devastating. Again, it bore my eyes out in the sheds. It is hard to take, because up until that point, up until doing my knee the first time, I hadn't had any injuries, nothing serious. So not that I couldn't handle the setbacks, but it just was, more or less a kick in the guts. You go through the work. We only have to look at Slade and Tao and, you can ask them and they'll probably smack me in the back of the head if I sit in here and mope out too. But, just understand that you got to go through that again. But also the lost season, I think that hurts as much. When I did the first one, I basically lost an off season, whereas this one was round 7, 8. I missed a whole year of footy, a whole year of playing, and enjoying footy with my mates and obviously pushing ourselves to try and make finals and go on to win competitions, which that's as hard as anything. When you're in doing, your rehab and, they're out on the field and doing their best and you just can't be a part of it.
Yeah.
And so I suppose that's why I'm always checking in with our boys in rehab, because I know it can be a pretty dark time in rehab. It's not always the case, but there's peaks and troughs of, your mental headspace.
So you get back from the second ACL, and then there's starting to be a lot of change at Manly. A lot of players starting to move on, and down the road, you become one of them. Talk me through that process of leaving Manly and joining the Knights, because I think it's fair to say that you're probably one of the first players to instigate a wave of change at the Knights.
Yeah, it was. It came on really quickly. I suppose the year before I did come, my manager said there'd been some inquiries about me coming. At this point, I had 2 years to run on my Manly deal, and there was no way I was going to leave with 2 years to run. While I respected and appreciated the fact that they'd kind of asked the question, it never in my mind was I looking to move. I had a young daughter at the time. My wife Grace was pregnant with our second, and it kind of went on, had ended up having a good year, 2016. I think it was Trent Barrett's first year, and it was a bit of a mixed bag year for us. Like you said, there was a lot of change. There was a lot of new people coming in, a lot of senior players moving on. And in that respect, it was quite difficult, kind of a whole cultural shift, really. And obviously different coaching philosophies and a lot of things that did work well and some didn't. And I suppose I got to the end of that year. There's still another year to run. And as far as I was aware, they were happy to have me for that next year. During the year, I'd actually captained the team a fair few times, and I felt as safe as you could feel. And then the day after our presentation night, when I was a little bit dusty, I got a call from my manager, and he said, "Oh, look, I just got off the phone, and Newcastle are really interested." And I said, "Oh, well, that's good. I've got another year at Manly." And said, "Oh, well, they've said..." And it kind of started with, "Oh, look, you should really look into Newcastle. It's a good opportunity for you to get more footy, because we can't guarantee anything after this coming year." Mm-hmm. And at this point, we'd had our second child. And I thought, "Oh, look, I don't really want to move away. If Manly doesn't want me after this year, that's fine. Okay. I'll just stay, and then we'll see what happens after that." And then after kind of approaching it that way, the management at Manly, the one in particular, but I won't name names,
sure,
essentially said, "Look, it's in your best interest that you go. You won't, you're going to struggle to be in the first grade team, we'll make sure of that, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's in your best interest that you kind of move on.
So you're backed into a corner, basically.
Yeah, in a little, in a way. But having said that, at that point, I started having good conversations with Nathan Brown and Moons. So there was certainly a part of me that was interested, especially in the vision that they had. Obviously, Newcastle weren't doing great at the time. But obviously, they were brought in to kind of bring on some change.
Yeah.
And that aspect really did excite me. You know, I'd been at Manly for so long. It was not that it would have gone stale in any way, but I suppose if there was any time to kind of make a move, it was probably close at hand.
Yeah.
And then from, you know, some pretty in-depth conversations with my wife, with my manager, and some of my best friends, I just thought it was in my best interest to kind of move on to Newcastle. And I had a sit down with Brownie and Moons at I think it's Tallulah's,
yeah,
with Grace, and we had a great feed and just kind of more or less a more in-depth discussion about, you know, what they would look to have from me and what they want to see from me and what they want to do with the club. And I was essentially, I was hooked after that. You know, I understood that there was a big job at hand coming here, but I was excited by the prospects.
Give us a little bit of insight to that conversation. You know, a club that's struggling, wooden spoons, looking to dig themselves out of that hole. How do you pitch that to a player, that there are going to be some tough times, but you're going to be part of that turnaround?
It was more, I suppose, I could see where they wanted to go with things, and I had to kind of make a bit of a leap of faith, because obviously there wasn't a whole, I think Rory, he said that they were pretty close to sign him, or he had been signed.
Yep.
There was some discussions of a few other players, and you know, a few of which we missed out on. And it was more or less just having faith that, you know, Moons was saying, look, next year we've got a lot of good young players, which we did, a lot of which are now regulars in the squad, you know, in the Safidis, and Danny Levi was here, and Mitch Barnett, and Fitzy, to name a few. I'm probably missing one of them or something. But, you know, they had faith in those blokes to continue to grow, and hopefully pick up a few other veterans going into the 2017 season, and then 2018 kind of buy a few more players. And again, the players that were there would continue to grow and improve. And then, you know, on to 2019 now, where, you know, we've signed some even more players, kind of KP's coming into his prime. And again, you could say the same for Fitzy and Barney. And so they weren't too far wrong in their vision. You know, looking back, obviously we would have liked to have done a little better last year. But all in all, you know, the conversation we had and the way they mapped it out, you know, it's kind of slowly coming to fruition now.
Away from the field, you're studying. Tell us about your plans, life after footy. I'd imagine with a young family, that's something that is in the back of the mind.
Yeah, I'm studying sports business. Obviously, being involved in sport is something that, you know, appeals to me. You know, I've been part of a professional organisation now for 10 or 11 years, so I certainly feel that there's aspects of that I can contribute. You know, there's a few little things that kind of in the pipeline. I won't go too far into a few of them, but I've still got a little bit of uni left to go, but it's certainly something you think about more and more at this stage, and what comes next. But you know, I feel like I've done a good job of kind of preparing myself, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, kind of when I had those serious knee injuries.
Yeah.
You know, if they'd happened to me early in my career, you know, before I'd kind of built up some capital with the clubs, there's every chance I would have been out the back door. So it was very much an eye opener for me, and I started to kind of get my ducks in a row and start thinking about, you know, what's next, and you know, I feel as prepared as I can be.
How do you juggle full time training, being a father of a young family, and then also study? Not enough hours in the day.
Look, it's difficult. It is difficult. I'm thankful that you know, I got a very supportive wife who does a great job with our four kids. Very hands-on, happy to give me time to study, as long as I'm not taking the mickey. But also, you know, you just find time. You know, Isla now, my oldest, she's at school. So on days off when kids are at daycare and whatnot, you try and steal a couple hours of study here and a couple there. Or if you've got a day off the next day, you might kind of stay up a bit later and knock out some uni work. So it's not without its challenges. Mm. It certainly is a challenge. But, you know, I think it was something that's important for all players, you know, regardless of, you know, if you just started or at the back end, to kind of leave football with something. You know, there's so many great initiatives now in education that you'd be silly not to take advantage of them.
Absolutely. As we look to wrap up, you've played with some practical jokesters. I think it's fair to say Denny Levi probably takes the cake at the moment of this current Knights group. But what are some of the better jokes that you've seen over the years, whether it's at Manly or here?
We had, I think there was one I saw at Manly. I can't remember who it was that they got, but I think it was the second preseason, the person that it was, and I think they're on a training trial, and they got messaged. We had a day off the next day, but we all used to catch up and get breakfast, and we messaged this person. It wasn't me, actually. I'm not going to take any credit for this, because I didn't. We messaged them off a different number and essentially said, kind of, this is such and such from the Daily Telegraph. We want to sit down with you and have an interview. Can you meet us at this cafe at this time? We just need you to wear your Manly kit. And if you've got any other, like any of your junior stuff, we kind of want to get some photos of that too. And so we all caught up at about, I think it was maybe 8:39. We all had breakfast. So by the time breakfast finished, it was rolled around the time that crossed the road at the cafe. We were expecting him to rock up, and he did. And then we just sat there for a good 30 minutes while he waited and waited and waited. And then he ends up calling the number and that messaged him. And one of the boys had the phone, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I've been waiting however long." And he's like, "Oh yeah, just look across the road at the cafe." And he looks across, and we're all just there, just losing it. So,
wow.
That's probably the most. That's the PG ones. and we'll probably leave it at that.
No worries. Thanks for sitting down with me, sharing your story.
No worries. Thank you.